Hi, this is Bernie Wides on the air again for the Heritage Radio Network. This program is The Naturalist, and today I have another special guest who was here once before, one of my favorite astronomers, Mike Hamburg from the Museum of Natural History, and we're going to talk about astronomy and a lot of interesting stuff. But before we get started, we have a sponsor today, Hearst Ranch, I guess, farms or ranch, where they raise grass-fed beef. So we'll get back to that later on, but I want Michael to say hello, and we'll get started in a minute.
Hi, it's great to be here again, Bernie.
Okay, and here we are in Bushwick, Brooklyn, and today it's raining, but it's spring, so I guess we need the rain. That's... So today's topic is we're going to talk about stars. Now, I know we just went through the Academy Award nonsense, but we're not going to mention any of those stars. We're going to talk about stars that are real stars and that are part of our universe and that really are an essential part of our universe. So, Michael, why don't you tell us about what is a star to start off with?
Okay, Bernie. A star is simply a large sphere of a special kind of gas that is giving off a tremendous amount of radiation, both in the form of heat and light. And this gas is not kind of the gas that we think of normally on Earth, which is relatively cool temperatures, but a very hot type of gas called a plasma. And the plasma is a high temperature form of a gas that has its electrons stripped and only the protons and neutrons are left.
Okay, so that's the simple definition of plasma,
right,
and star. Okay, so I know that the sun is a star, so it's our very own star. It's the star of our solar system.
Correct, Bernie. In fact, we've learned more about stars because we are fortunately living close to a typical star. And the sun is now about halfway through its lifespan, but not to worry, it has still many billions of years to go.
Okay, what about 2 billion years?
About five, but
about
before
five, okay.
Before the five run out, strange things are going to happen. So we can talk about that in this program also. But the star that we call the sun is responsible for our being alive.
Right.
It is the source of all energy.
Okay, so that's why our galaxy is we call it the solar system.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
Because it's sun-centered.
Yes, it is.
Which was a big dispute years ago, right, Mike?
A few hundred years ago, well, for many, many years, the Earth, of course, was considered the center of the universe because people relied on their senses. And today, if you were to go outside, you would look at the sky at both during the day and the night, and everything seems to go around in circles around the Earth. So logically, you would think, well, we are the center. But fortunately, we were able to learn as a species that we can't rely on our senses when it comes to things astronomical.
Mm-hmm. Either they're too big,
too far away,
yeah,
or they're too dim, or
right,
they exist in invisible forms which our eyes are not built to see.
Right, different wavelengths of the electromagnetic spectrum.
Right, the electromagnetic spectrum is simply all forms of light, both the visible kind of light, and maybe people could be familiar with types of light that is invisible, such as X-rays, such as radio and microwaves, which are all the same phenomenon, but they have different energy levels and they have different wavelengths. And by wavelength, if you can picture the ocean with a series of waves, it's simply the measurement between either the tops of the waves or the bottoms of the waves.
The trough,
yeah.
Trough,
and
right.
The shorter the wavelength, the more energetic the energy, you know, the light is, and the longer, the less it is.
Okay, but that has nothing to do with the speed of light, though.
No, the speed of light is constant for every photon, which is the carrier of light, travels at the same speed, which is approximately 186,000 miles every second.
Mm-hmm. So I remember something about light If you had light traveling around the Earth, it would go, what, 8.5 times?
Seven and a half times in one second. It's a pretty whirlwind tour, isn't it? Yeah.
It's a quick tour. You don't have to make reservations or take your shoes off.
But certain strange things will happen to you. But that's for another show,
yeah,
right?
We'll save that for another show.
Okay.
Okay, so so we said that the sun is a star.
Right.
And tell me something about how stars form.
Okay. Well, stars all form basically in the same way from the same materials. Picture out there in space vast clouds of dust, very fine dust and gas, mainly hydrogen, cool hydrogen. And what would happen to this is something passes through that neighborhood and disturbs the stability of that cloud. And the molecules of hydrogen and the dust start to move. Once you move, things change. That's a universal. And because everything has gravity, every mass, every particle has some gravitational influence, these particles can start to collect in groups.
Mm-hmm.
And over millions of years, the groups get bigger and bigger, and they get denser because they're getting closer together.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get an object that's denser, the temperature starts to rise because the molecules are jumping and bouncing off of each other, creating
right.
heat.
Like friction.
Like friction, exactly.
Yeah, so there's gravity, some gravity all over our universe.
Yes.
Yeah, that's still mysterious, though.
Well.
Gravity, right?
It's a great topic, you know.
You want to save that for another time?
Well, I'll just briefly just kind of say, the gravity is universal. It is everywhere, and ironically, it is the weakest of all the forces.
Really?
Yeah, we have strong forces that keep the atom together. We have forces that repel from the atom. But gravity, which is found all over the universe, is very weak, and yet it is probably one of the most important ones in terms of forming our universe.
And keeping it together. Together,
yeah,
right.
Right.
Okay, so what happens now? Oh, we didn't get to how its stars form yet, so we're working on that.
Yeah, so anyway, this gravity is influencing all these little dust particles and gas particles, and they're growing into larger and denser clumps. And over many, many years, as the temperature rises and the gravity of each clump increases, it attracts more clumps. So it's a self-starting, self-contained process. And finally, because of something called angular momentum, this cloud that's getting denser and denser starts to turn in a circular way. It starts to rotate.
Mm-hmm.
And as it rotates, it flattens out into a disk.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And all of the denser material starts to migrate towards the center. And this becomes the densest part, and will eventually become the star. First, it becomes something called a protostar, which is the dense ball of gas and dust, but before a very special process begins, which is really what makes stars different than every other object in the universe.
Okay, so they to become a star, they really need a certain density.
Yes, they do.
The nuclear stuff.
That's the key, Bernie.
Yeah.
They need a certain density and a certain temperature, and then something very, very, very wonderful happens, and that is in the center of this whirling disk, atoms of hydrogen start to stick together in a nuclear way. They start to share their protons and neutrons and electrons, and they become a new element. And in that process, which is called thermonuclear fusion, heat and light is given out, and a star is born.
A tremendous amount of energy.
Tremendous amount of energy. In fact, there are 7 million tons of hydrogen are combined every second on the sun to form helium. Mm. And that's been going on for almost 5 billion years.
Yeah.
Tremendous.
Okay, so once the nuclear furnace is lit, this is in the center part of the sun,
yes,
right? Densest part?
Yes, the densest part is called the core.
The core, okay.
And when you make a star, of course, that is where the furnace is.
Yeah, so the furnace, you don't have to take a match to light it, or there's no lighter to light it, right? It's just because of the pressure?
Yes, yes.
And the increased temperature. The temperature keeps going up.
Exactly.
And then
exactly.
You have
the nuclear process beginning.
Nuclear process.
Now, this is a relatively recent discovery.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you a little bit about it after this.
Yeah, we're going to stop right now and take a short break and to get our stars in order. And we'll be back in 1 minute. Remember, our sponsor today is Hearst Farms or Hearst Ranch, purveyors of grass-fed beef. Here we are back on the air now. We've taken a short break, and my guest today is Mike Hamburg, one of my friends and co-explainers at the Museum of Natural History, and Mike is an astronomer. And we were talking about the stars, and we said, what is a star? And we said a star is something that is burning, and it's giving off tremendous amount of heat energy and light energy and energy in all different wavelengths of the electromagnetic spectrum. And we started to talk about our sun, because our sun is our most important star. It's at the center of our solar system, and we all depend on it for everything. So, Mike, let's talk a little bit more about the sun. You know, what did the ancient peoples think about the sun?
Well, what's interesting is, of course, obviously the sun was bright, and we had day, and then all of a sudden, we wouldn't see the sun. It would seem to set someplace, and we would have night. And people thought that this was some type of vehicle, some kind of celestial vehicle, probably ridden by gods or goddesses. In fact, the Greeks thought about this, the chariot of fire, and how the sun god would go and go to his home at night and go to sleep, because these phenomena were humanized by the ancient people.
Yeah, was that Apollo? Was that the Greek one or the Roman one? I get them all mixed up.
Well, no, Apollo was a Greek, but you see, Apollo was associated with the sun as drawing the chariot.
Oh, okay.
But that's a much later story. The sun god, interestingly, was called Helios.
And Helios.
Helios,
okay,
gives us the modern name for the element helium, which was discovered on the sun.
Okay.
And that's why it was called helium, from the Greek word helios.
Helios, right.
And, you know, obviously, again, when I began talking with you, Bernie, we talked about how our senses were teaching us things. And that is why when we saw the sun move, rise in the east, make an arc high in the sky at noon, and then come down in the west, I mean, logic would tell me that everything's going around the earth.
Right. It was an Earth-centric universe.
It was definitely Earth-centric. And that lasted right up until the 15th, 16th century. And then Copernicus came along and revolutionized everything.
Yeah. You know what we might do, Mike? We might save for another program, talk about some famous astronomers. Like Copernicus and Kepler and Galileo.
Right. Galileo.
And even my favorite guy, Tycho Brahe from Denmark. The man without the nose.
Yep, the silver nose.
There's an opera right now at the Metropolitan called The Nose, and I always think about Tycho Brahe. And you know, when I went to Denmark, most people in Denmark didn't even know about him, who I was talking about. And I said, is there any museum or anything? I said, no. I said, you know, I remember the king gave him an island to build his observatory.
Yes,
and,
yes. It was near the city of, I think it was called Königsberg then, but I don't know where it is now, because the political lines have shifted up there so much of the ball.
I'll have to do some research. Okay. We'll talk about some of these guys.
Excellent.
Okay, so we're talking about the sun forming from the condensation of molecules.
Yes, and this is known as the solar nebula theory, because the word nebula in Latin just means cloud. And instead of water droplets, we're talking about a cloud of gas and dust. This is an old theory. This is from the late 18th century. The wonderful, brilliant French mathematician and astronomer Simon de Laplace really came up with this before the turn of the 19th century. And it's pretty much what is the modern explanation with a little fine-tuning about it.
Right. So so here we have the sun starting to do its thing.
Right.
Okay? And now let's talk about the size of the sun a little bit. Okay?
Good. All right. Now, the sun is approximately about 865,000 miles in diameter.
Wow. And the Earth in diameter?
And the Earth is, you know, the Earth in diameter is a little under 8,000. In fact, more than a million Earths would fit inside of the sun.
Right.
But the amazing thing, Bernie, is that the sun is not considered a large star. It is considered a rather small to average star. I mean, there are stars that are much, much bigger than, in fact, the largest star is 3,000 times the size of the sun. Imagine being on a planet orbiting that one. God. And yet there are smaller stars, too. There is a star with the romantic name of AC plus 70-8247. That, you know that one, right?
Yeah,
that comes in poetry. That's only 4,000 miles in diameter, which is half the diameter of the Earth.
And it's a burning star?
It's a burning star.
So it had enough mass and
to
start burning. That's interesting.
Interesting.
So, so we know now that the sun is a star and that it's burning, and that it's at the center of our solar system. And, well, we know we get light from the sun, right? And warmth, because you can feel it.
Right.
But what else? Do we get stuff that's dangerous from the sun?
Yeah, of course. Okay. But just want to make a comment about how much warmth we get. We actually are receiving 2 billionths of a percent of all the energy the sun radiates, and that's just perfect. Anything more would be dangerous. Anything less wouldn't be warm enough. 2 billionths. That's a tiny number.
That's not too much.
No, but it's just right. Yeah, we of course, as everybody knows during the summer months, that everybody's yelling about putting sunscreen on. And that is because one of the electromagnetic phenomena that comes off the sun is ultraviolet rays. They are strong enough to cause burning of the skin.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to put some kind of sun block on it. And that's what we're blocking. We're blocking
the UV
rays. Okay.
Yeah, so you put sunscreen on, you want a high UV index in the sunscreen stuff.
That's right.
Right? The higher, the better, probably.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, when we say sunburn, it's really burning our skin.
It is actually causing burns to the cells of the skin.
Right.
Yes, and that could be damaged. And over a longer period of time, it is thought to lead to certain types of skin cancers.
Right.
Yeah.
And when, as a kids, we all ran around, but, you know, I spent the summers at the beach.
Right.
With my bathing suit on all day.
We were much less informed in those days.
Yeah, my partner, Janet, she grew up near Brighton, and she now has a lot of precancerous cells that have to be removed because of sun exposure. And it all depends on your genes also and on your skin, how much melanin.
Right, right.
Melatonin is the other stuff.
Right. That's for another topic.
That's a sleep cycle.
But also the sun gives off radio waves.
Right.
And one of the most interesting things, and we talk about this in the museum, is the sun also gives off high energy particles like protons, which are the heart, the nucleus of the hydrogen atom, and electrons, and they're accelerated to tremendous speeds. And if they were allowed to hit the Earth, all life on Earth would be wiped out and never would have arisen in the first place. Luckily, we have a shield against this so-called solar wind called the magnetic field around the Earth.
Yes, and that's really important. Most people really don't know about the magnetic field. If you talk to them, you know, they think that we're exposed to the sun and we get all the rays and, you know, you have to wear protective this and protective that and all that. But some of these high-energy particles would go right through the clothing anyhow,
absolutely,
right through the protection.
Absolutely. It would do a lot of damage.
Do a lot of damage to us, and probably we would never have evolved.
That is
true. You know, even at the beginning when we think that there was just primitive stuff like bacteria and cyanobacteria and those guys, they even had to be protected. So, you know, one of the theories that life started in the oceans, because on the surface of the Earth, the atmosphere wasn't as thick as...
Well, it had very little oxygen, right. And it was not as thick. But the other thing that might be interesting is some of those potentially harmful rays might have even changed or mutated those bacteria so that they were able to convert carbon dioxide into oxygen. That's a process we know as photosynthesis.
Right, yeah. Sure. So, yeah, we don't know how photosynthesis arose, really. I mean, when we talk about it at the museum, I say these bacteria learned how to do photosynthesis, which is as good as anything because we really don't know. But that's one of the theories, is through mutation caused by ultraviolet or some other energy.
Some type of high energy particles, yeah, right? That's true. By the way, just as an interest, the sun, we do know the weight of the sun, otherwise called its mass. And just for a number, if anybody wants to play around with this number, in scientific notation, it would be 2 × 10³⁰ grams. That's a 2 with 33 zeros after it. Yes. So write that number out and see how big that is. It is a billion, billion, billions of tons.
Yeah, well, with that heavyweight idea, we're going to take a break again. I remember our sponsor is Hearst Ranch. And they produce organic, grass-fed beef. And we'll be back in a minute. Hi, here we are back on the air again, and we were talking about stars, but before we go back into the firmament, I just want to mention my daughter, who is a star also, my own star, and she has a program called Why We Cook, and it's a great show. It's on Tuesdays, and if you get a chance, tune it in. She has recipes and all kinds of great information about foods. But to get back to Michael Hamburg, and we were talking about stars. What is the sun made out of? I don't think we covered that at all. We said it's condensed matter, mostly was hydrogen squeezed together, and then the sun changed the hydrogen into helium. But is there any other stuff in the sun?
Well, it's about 75% of the mass of the sun is hydrogen, and almost 25% is the helium, and then there's a trace of everything else. Mm-hmm. Because there is no such thing as a pure environment. And we know this, and a lot of people ask me, how can you tell it? You can't go and grab a piece of the sun and bring it into the laboratory. So we have to analyze the light. And the way we do this is we take the light and we break it down into its component parts, something called spectroscopy. We talked a little bit about this last December on that. It's a wonderful, wonderful tool that allowed scientists to do actual remote analysis. And we take a look at what that spectrum of the sun looks like, and we can tell everything about it.
Okay, that's good. And spectrometry is used a lot in astronomy. It's sort of a basic tool now. So we can tell almost what anything is made out of from the light coming from it.
Absolutely.
Right? These extrasolar objects that are so far away and other things.
Yeah, well, yeah. Bernie, we're just talking about one particular star right now, and there are infinitely billions and billions of stars in the observable universe, and some of them are bone-crushingly far away.
Yeah.
So we take their light, and we can actually tell what's happening with that, how old they are, how hot they are, what type of star they are.
Okay, so let's talk about our sun then. How old, you said the sun is about...
Our sun is about 5 billion years old right
okay,
now.
Okay, so what's going to happen to the sun in the future?
Really interesting. And I don't want anybody to get too nervous about this because it's really far in the future.
Right.
But one of the things about a star, any star, is that like people, they're born, they live, they get infirm, and they eventually die. And the reason is that they run out of fuel. It's interesting that when we drive a car here on Earth, if we're getting low on fuel, we go to a gas station and we fill up again. For most of the stars in the universe, that's an impossibility. So when they run out of gas, that is the beginning of the end for them.
Mm-hmm.
So our sun will eventually run out of the hydrogen and the little bit of helium that it might fuse into something else. And then because it's not energetic hot enough, it can't go any further.
Mm-hmm.
It will cool and it will start to shed its outer layers.
Mm-hmm.
And it will swell up to what we call a red giant. Now, red giant, although it's bigger, is actually cooler. Another thing is the colors go towards the red. That means a lowering of the temperature. And although it's cool, it's still hot enough to incinerate the first three planets as it grows. And I think we're number three?
Yeah.
But don't worry, this won't start to happen for about another 3 or 4 billion years. And another thing is happening at the same time. We are actually going to have a collision with our neighboring galaxy, the Andromeda Galaxy. So it should be an interesting time.
Sure.
Sun is growing bigger. Galaxies are colliding. I hope by that time, if whatever passes for intelligence at that time knows how to handle this situation.
Right. They may leave altogether.
Right. Right. Well, right.
Right. I mean, you know, even the property in Florida wouldn't be very good.
I
mean,
not at all. I think we'd have to look at some of the moons of Saturn.
Yeah, to move to.
Yes.
Oh, well. But, you know, you said billion years.
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, if you're around now and you grow old and you die, and then maybe if you're lucky, you have grandchildren, maybe your grandchildren will know you. But once your grandchildren die, you know, you're sort of a forgotten entity. Maybe if you're buried in a cemetery and the cemetery is still there, your name will be there. But that's the end of it. But the stars really go on forever.
Well,
and how do they go?
What's
what do we have
Bernie?
To do with forever, with
well,
the stars?
What's interesting is that, first, the sun, which is our most important star, is not from the first generation of stars. It itself was built on the recycled material from an older generation of stars.
So there's recycling.
There is definite recycling. The universe is a great recycling machine. So maybe about 400 million years after the initial birth of the universe, the Big Bang, the first generation of stars formed out of vast clouds of hydrogen.
Hmm.
These stars were giants, and because they are so big, they burned very hot, and you pay a price for that. Being a party animal like that, your lifespan is short. These stars died after perhaps only a couple of million years, which is very, very little time for a star, and they died in huge explosions called supernova.
Okay, so they didn't burn themselves out.
No.
But they used up their fuel, and then they...
They couldn't support themselves
couldn't
anymore.
Couldn't support themselves.
They couldn't support. They literally collapsed under their own weight and rebounded in these huge explosions, which is actually a very good thing, because those explosions created the elements for the next generation of stars.
Okay, so that's really the zenith of recycling. And aren't we made up of those same elements?
We are absolutely made up of those elements.
So we get recycled that way.
Absolutely. Our atoms are almost, as far as we know, eternal.
Right, because once we die and our atoms are still left, they don't die. Who knows what happens to them? You know, they could be used again and again and again.
This is true.
Probably are. So really, the old Indian idea of reincarnation, you never know what you're going to come back as.
Well, you may not recognize your neighbor or your friend or something, but certainly the atoms will be there unchanged.
Yes, that's true. The atoms don't change. They just get reshuffled around and recombined to form other stuff. So that's, Yeah, that's a good thing to think about, Michael. Did you want to add something to that?
Most people find this thought very, very comforting.
It is.
They do. And they also think that it's very poetic. But I always emphasize this is hard astrophysics.
Right.
This is not a metaphor. This is what really happens.
Right. It's not a myth or a legend.
Not at all.
You know, and I think most religions have some kind of afterlife.
Yes.
Or you come back as this or that, and you go to a certain place.
Right.
I know a friend, he just wants to go to New Jersey when he dies, because he likes New Jersey.
I don't know why. We better teach him about recycling in the universe, right?
So to look at it from a cosmic point of view, when we die, our atoms don't die. They just become recombined, and we'll turn into something else.
Absolutely.
And
you know,
go on forever.
Space is filled with all of these ghosts' atoms.
Yeah. So with that notion that we go on forever, but in this program we can't, because the program is just about over. We don't have any more time for this program. But the second part of this program will be next week, and we're going to continue with Michael Hamburg and talk some more about celestial matters. So we're going to sign off now. And